So that's what he had me do, and it worked really well. And I finished, and then the next year I did it again, and I actually cut, I think almost an hour off my time because I figured some stuff out. Like the first time you're just kind of trying to just finish without dying, and then the second one I figured. But the long answer, or that was the long answer. The short answer is I hang around with people who have audacious goals, and if you hang around with people who have audacious goals, eventually you're going to amaze yourself. You're going to do stuff that you absolutely know you could never do.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Nita Sweeney. Nita is a runner and author and a mental health advocate. Now, you may know that running an ultramarathon takes a lot of determination, a lot of strong mindset. So does writing a book. In fact, writing a book and running an ultramarathon requires a very similar amount of determination and mindset. Nita has written a total of 11 books, and three of these have been published. Nita has a lot of great stories to share about her experience as an author and as a runner. Hope you enjoy my conversation with Nita Sweeney. Well, Nita, thank you a lot for doing that, for coming and talking to me. I appreciate it. I always try to ask, I kind of give people a background of who you are, because oftentimes I will, before I ask someone to be a guest, I may know a lot about them. But my audience doesn't. So if you did, just kind of tell who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm a writer from Central Ohio. I've published a couple of books primarily about mental health, meditation, running, dogs, breakfast. Those are my favorite things.
Breakfast.
Actually, I don't think I'm not, now that I say that, I'm not sure. There was some mention in the most recent book of breakfast, but I'm not sure. And unicorns. There were mentions of unicorns. But yeah, my first book was a memoir, running and mental health memoir. That's my journey from very, very chronically depressed, couch potato, to much less depressed, not cured, but much healthier, long distance runner, now including ultramarathons. At the time I had done marathon. And then most recently I wrote a book about meditation. I've been meditating for 30 years. I'm a certified meditation teacher. And so I combine the two, which seems odd to people, but it's very natural. It actually is very natural if you, get over the myth of what meditation is supposed to be.
Right.
So that's who I am. I'm an award-winning author from Central Ohio, USA.
Yeah, I like that. And I want to ask you more about meditation later, but you mentioned breakfast. And so I just I thought, let's start with breakfast. Breakfast is, it's like, that's kind of the meal that I really enjoy the most. I mean, really, that seems to be for me the main meal. But so many people that I talk to is like, oh, well, they'll have just a little, nothing, or skip breakfast. And we travel with some friends, and their main meal is dinner, which, evening is what we consider. And so they'll skip breakfast and not have, much for lunch and eat a big dinner. And I'm just a total opposite. I want a good breakfast to start out, and lunch is my main meal, and I'll have something light for dinner. It's difficult. When we travel with them, it's like, okay, what are we going to eat? I was like, oh, not much, are we going to have breakfast? No, let's get going. So tell me about your breakfast. You say you threw that
well
in there.
Yeah. So, and I just wanted to say too, there's a trend of intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people don't eat breakfast because they're still in their fast.
Right.
And they don't break the fast till noon. So that's possible. For me, breakfast has a lot of meaning, because my father put himself through college as a shorter cook, and he cooked, made the best eggs and hash browns and, big country breakfast, bacon on the weekends. Especially Sunday, he would make a big, big breakfast. So there's a nostalgic kind of part to it, nostalgia. But I just love breakfast. I mean, I'll have breakfast for dinner, breakfast for lunch. And now it's become kind of a joke among the runners that the group of runners that I run with most regularly. We'll see each other on the trail. We're different paces. And so we'll go out and back. And, you know, if they come back first or I come first, whatever, we see each other. And it's like, breakfast, breakfast, breakfast. Yes, because everybody knows Nita wants to go to breakfast after we run. We do. And it's a camaraderie. It's a time for catching up. It's a, you know, socialization, plus the pure enjoyment, the physical enjoyment of the flavors and the sensations and the smells of food that I love. And it, you know, for somebody else, it could be dinner, it could be supper, whatever you call it. It could be a fine cuisine meal. For me, it's scrambled eggs with vegetables in them and maybe some potatoes on the side or a couple eggs over easy on hash browns and things like that. It can be very, very simple. I was raised a farm girl, so simple things are very attractive to me. I enjoy fine French cuisine along with everything else, but just give me some scrambled eggs with vegetables in them and I'm a happy, happy girl.
That's good. Yeah. And eggs, I tend to go for eggs as well for breakfast. You talked about intermittent fasting. Do you know many people who will reverse that and fast from like noon until, 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, all the monks. Pretty much any monk I know does that. They okay. They only eat till noon and then they're done till 5 a.m.
Yeah.
But I think with intermittent fasting, though, if I understand the concept, it can be done any way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be done where you eat breakfast and lunch and then don't eat anything again until breakfast. The idea is just to narrow your window of eating.
Right.
And
right.
So some people do 12 and 12. Some people do, 20 and 4. I mean, it depends on how extreme they want to get or if they're easing into it. I have tried it and I tend to get, and it's possible that I didn't give it didn't stick with it long enough, but I tend to feel very weak and have what feels like low blood sugar, feels like a very severe drop in my blood sugar. And again, it could be the kind of thing that it would play itself out and my body would adjust over time, but I just didn't like that very lightheaded, weak feeling. And I think I tried it while I was probably training too much. So that's never, you're never supposed to change like all the things at the same time.
Yeah.
But I'm a runner, so we do that.
Yes, I understand that. Runners, we have a tendency to do things that's like, yeah, that's not a good idea, but yeah, let's try
let's
it and
do
see
it
if
anyway.
We can do it anyway.
I'll be different. It'll be different for me.
Yes. Well, and the reason I ask it is that I like intermittent fasting, but for me, it's easier to not eat from like noon. And then, you're asleep for half the time that you're fasting. And so that, for me, that's a lot easier because then I get up and do breakfast, which is, what I love to do. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's true with anything. You have to find what works for you. For me, there has to be pleasure in it. There has to be some pleasure in it. If I get too much restriction, I just rebel against it. And so it's partly knowing yourself and then also being honest with yourself too. Is that, am I kidding myself that this is actually working? And, for me, it just wasn't because I was so miserable that I knew that even if I did lose a bunch of weight on it or maintain a really healthy weight on it, I wouldn't stick with it because it was so unpleasant. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, it's the kind of thing where you have to know yourself. Some people can do that. They enjoy the edge of doing something that's really, really difficult, which is kind of ironic because we're going to be talking about ultramarathons. So. Yeah. But there's a place where there's a line there where it works for me, might not work for somebody else, doesn't work for me, does work for somebody else. And I forget, it was George Sheehan, somebody said, we're each an experiment of one. Mm-hmm. And what works for me might not work for somebody else. And that's just kind of the way it is. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, and human nature, it's just, we can do things, we can choose the things that we want to do that are difficult. And then there's other parts of your life are like, well, no, I want comfort. And so, it seems to be hypocrisy, but really it isn't. I mean, it's just kind of the way that most of us are wired is that we can go out and do hard things, but then in another area of life, it's like, I've had times in my life that I've had parts of my life that were out of control, but I was very disciplined in others. And it's hard to get, everything all kind of lined up the way, so it's all consistent.
Right. And then something breaks and, you know, it's crazy. And just when we think we've got it all under control, then it all breaks loose. So but you're right, though. I think the wiring is so important to understand how you're wired and to do what you can to push those edges. But you're right. There are plenty of places where I just want comfort and I don't see the harm in that. Mm-hmm. There have been times in my life where I've done things that were for comfort that have been harmful and had to eventually give those up. But, you know, right now it doesn't feel like this is a harmful thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I like what you said about, you know, being an experiment of one. I mean, you really have to learn what works for you and you know, you can take advice from other people, but oftentimes you can take something that works it couldn't be working for everyone else. And it just like, it's hard to, you know, it's for whatever reason, the way you're wired, it doesn't, it just doesn't take. And you don't have to be afraid of doing something that nobody else is doing because it's like, if it's working for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and chances are there's somebody out there doing it. There's just like nothing new under the sun really, but it might not be somebody that you know, and it might not be the training group that you're in. I actually adore the training group I've been running with for about, I guess it's been 10 years now. And there are some times that I just don't do the workouts that are recommended, or I do a different training plan, or I, you know, run much slower than they're going. I choose my own pace. And it took me a while because there's some peer pressure, to sort of do what everybody else is doing. And gratefully, as I age, let's just say, I'm less concerned about, I still care what people think. I still very much care what people think, but I also, you have to find that balance where it's what works for you. So that's going to be our theme, is that what works for you.
Yes. What works for you? Well, how, Nita, how did you get started as a runner?
Oh, it was an accident. I never intended to run. I was in my late 40s and I had about four of the worst years that, knock on wood, I hope to ever have in my life, where I had all these loved ones who died, including my 24-year-old niece and my mother. In an 11-month period, we had 7 loved ones and a cat die, including my mom. And I have chronic depression. I'm bipolar, but it manifests as depression most of the time. Okay. That's when I'm having symptoms. It was the second time in my life where I wasn't really sure hanging around was a good idea. Let's just say that I was really, really close to coming up with a plan to exit, an exit strategy. And I was on the sofa. There may have been bonbons. That's always my joke, but I don't know. There's probably some snacks, I'm sure. And I saw the social media post of this high school friend who was, you know, my age, at least as maybe bigger than I was at the time. I've lost some weight since then. And not athletic person, so sort of like all these things I could identify. And she posted, "Call me crazy, but this running is getting to be fun." And I thought, run, fun. Those words did not go together for me at all.
It rhymed, but
I was like, no, only when chased. Yeah, we hear that joke all the time now. But I watched her and I was not having fun. I was very, very miserable. I was on meds, lots of meds, actually. I was in therapy. I had a great supportive family. I'm married to an amazing man. I write. I had so much to live for, and I just was so depressed. It was physically painful. Depression is actually physically painful. Mm-hmm. And so I watched her, and she was doing the standard couch to 5K plan. That's what, you know, a lot of people have heard about. And so one day when, I don't know, spring rolled around or whatever, I leashed up the dog kind of as a decoy, yellow Labrador retriever, to let the neighbors who probably weren't home, I think I was just walking the dog. And I went down in this hidden ravine down near our house and had a kitchen timer, a digital kitchen timer, because the plan said jog for 60 seconds. Now, that's not the only thing it said, but that was the thing that I could wrap my head around. My mind could think, I think I can do that. And so I did. And then I was able to do that first workout. And that was the first exercise I had gotten in years. I mean, years. I could barely walk around the or block with my dog. And so I just sort of kept at that. It was, I think, every 3 days you would do something. I kept watching her and cheering her on, and I didn't tell anybody. And I started to feel kind of like a sense of accomplishment. After I think the third session, I actually broke a sweat, which I probably hadn't done in a decade. And I don't know, just something about it, being alone in the woods with the dog and that rhythm of the movement, really, I don't know, it spoke to me in a way that nothing had in a very long time. And so that's how it began. But what happened was, before I told people that I had started running, including my husband, I didn't even tell him, people started saying things like, did you get your hair cut differently? Or have you lost weight? And at that time I hadn't, but they noticed an energy or something that was different that I wasn't even aware of. And then eventually I told my husband, and eventually I told my sister, and it was her only child who had died of cancer that in that bad, bad year in 2007, that was. Jamie was her name. And she emailed me a few weeks later and said, there's this 5K to raise money for research for the type of cancer that Jamie died from. Will you come with me? I'm going to do the 1 mile. Will you do the 5K? And I, in my, it's going to sound self-centered, but it was actually depressive self-preservation, responded immediately, no, I'm a private runner. I'm never leaving this ravine. I mean, I'm ashamed of it now because, I mean, she was asking me to do something very helpful, very good. So it took me probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 days to get over myself and just remember my niece and how much she suffered. And, oh my gosh, you know, just to try to think, okay, can you just get out of yourself a little bit? And so I did. I signed up for that 5K. And that is what broke everything open for me, really, to see people of all shapes, all sizes, some in spandex, some in cotton, some in pink cotton, you know, I mean, everything, people of all ages, all races, just families at this charity 5K completely blew open my concept of who runners are, what they do, what they look like, how they act. I mean, everything, just because I had all these preconceived notions about the Boston Marathon and the New York City Marathon and not even the, I mean, I didn't know, they don't show the back of the Packers in this.
No, they don't. They always show the people who are the, you know, the fit runners who are, you know, placing, you know, they're the ones who win.
Right. Or you see a handful of mid pack maybe, and then you might see the last person. You know, the and those big races now they might see that. But at this time, this was a decade ago. It wasn't televised. I didn't see. And it wasn't on my radar, even if it was. So that encounter for a charity event that was something that was close to my heart and just seeing this whole variety, this world that I knew nothing about, that's just where that just captured my heart. And then I just wanted to do a bunch of these charity races, various types of, and I'm, you know, I'm a total back of the packer, but it was still so much fun to be out there and to be trying to beat my own time. And, and then eventually I realized I was actually, it's like the longer I went, the better I was. And so that's what led me to keep training for longer distances. It took me a couple of years to get to a marathon level. And then took me, I don't know, my first ultra wasn't until, was it like 2 or 3 years ago. So,
what do you mean the longer you went, the better you were? You felt better.
Yeah. Because you didn't have to, I mean, cause a 5K is basically a sprint.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really, I mean, that's what it looks like to most of the people in the front. They're blowing by you so fast. It's just, it's about on the back. They're just so fast. Whereas the longer I go, the stronger I feel. And I'm not, I mean, it's not like I can run forever. But I realized that I could do a half marathon. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe I can do a marathon. You know, it just seemed like it was, not that it's easier because you're going longer,
right?
But I have the endurance. I don't have the speed. I don't have the body for speed. I don't have the joints for speed. I don't do the training probably for speed because I'm trying not to get injured all the time. I don't want to do a lot of speed work, things like that. And so I'm just more comfortable being a little slower and going further. So that's, and I enjoy the time. I'm kind of my, I'm not sure who said this of me, but they want someone once said that Nita has an infinite capacity for boredom, which it's actually meditation is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's being mm-hmm. having that ability to be totally present at any given moment. So the longer I went, it was like I started enjoying, I still love a good 5K, but I enjoy the training for longer distances and I enjoy the actual experience of a longer race.
So when you were running in your ravine, did it ever occur to you that, you know, you might go farther? I mean, what was kind of going through? I mean, once you got past that, you know, initial, everybody who starts running, there's always that time for the first amount that really is, you really struggle. But did it get to be a place when you're running in the ravine that it was more, you could feel not necessarily a pleasure, but you could enjoy the movement. Were you at that point?
That actually happened very quickly.
Oh, really?
Because I don't know why I often attribute it to my age, but I knew instinctively that all of my body parts should be heading in the same direction. I should try not to bounce and that I should just relax as much as I could and slow down. Just do it as easy as I could. I have this congenital ankle defect, which acted up a bunch. And there's, it's, you know, that's, the first book is there's a lot of that about the emotional struggle with that, because it's physically it's not harmful at all, but I knew that, you know, in the past when I had tried other forms of exercise, I would get injured or I just always thought, oh, it's not my thing. See, I'm just broken. I'm just mm-hmm. broken. And there was just some part of me that thought, I don't want to break myself this time. How can I do this in a way that won't break me? And eventually I ended up taking a course in Qi running. Mm-hmm. And I also took a good form running and pose, you know, I studied pose running, all the kind of form things. And I realized that I was intuitively understanding something or getting something that was correct, was that, yeah, you should have everything trying to go in the same direction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't cross your arms over your body and try to keep your feet, you know, pointed straight, everything just going in like a little bit of a lean, all that kind of stuff. I was sort of naturally doing it. And it wasn't the way I ran naturally. The way I ran naturally would be huge strides, heel striking, mm-hmm. You know, pounding would be yes. what I would do. So I very quickly, I mean, within really the second or third of the workouts, within that first week, wow. I was feeling pleasure just from the exertion, from being outside with the dog, being in nature, all of that. Yep. It was just, I just thought, where has this been all my life? It just really, it just clicked very quickly.
And you were taking a fairly gradual plan as well. A lot of
very gradual.
A lot of
intervals.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of runners will, you know, like, say, oh, I'm going to start running, and they go out and they're doing, you know, they start out with a mile and they're, you know, it's like, oh, that's kind of the entry point is what they think. And they'll try to do a mile and it's tough and it's hard. And then they'll go out the next day and try to do the same, you know? So yeah, that's usually you know, the way a lot of us will just kind of jump in, you know, we gotta go all in. The gradual start would be a big help.
Yeah. The intervals really helped. And just something in me. Well, I mean, I was depressed. I couldn't go fast. and I think that was good. I mean, I think if I had been that person who wasn't and who tried to do that, I just think a lot of people run too many miles too fast and then wonder why they're miserable. I'm sorry. It's just my opinion.
Well, it's interesting. There are running groups that I follow in Facebook. I haven't been on them so much anymore, but a lot of runners who will run every day and they don't like running. And they're several of them talked about, you know, the things that they use to distract themselves because they, you know, they like the benefits, but they don't like the process.
Right. They like having run.
Yeah. That's what they say. Yeah. They like having run.
I understand. There's days that's like that. It's not all bliss, you know.
Yeah, there's times you have to kind of dig in and say, yes, you know, I've got to get this workout in because you've got goals. But so did you notice when was it that you noticed that the running was starting to affect your physical and your mental health?
Again, pretty quickly after a couple of weeks, I realized that I wasn't needing the nap in the afternoon that I had almost always needed. And I just felt a little clearer and a little sharper. And like I said, other people noticed it first. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it got to the point, and this either happened, I didn't mention it in the book because I think it wasn't the right timing. But eventually what happened is I started having the side effects of too much of my mental health medications. And we hadn't changed the dosage at all. I'd been on the same dose for years. Mm-hmm. But what my psychiatrist said was that the running was now giving me a lot of the happy brain chemicals is what I call them, but mm-hmm. Physiological benefits, you know, psychological benefits, all those benefits. And I was on too many meds. And so they kind of took me off all of them and then gradually put me back on just one. And I'm only on one med. At one point, I was on six meds. I'm only on one now. And that doesn't mean that tomorrow I won't need another one because I have the bipolar. And so a lot of times you end up cycling on different meds because they change, what works changes. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, this has been a few years now and I'm just still on that one medication. And there've been a few times when I've been injured and that's been a little difficult where I don't get the benefits. But, you know, it takes a couple months before you have that lag. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on if it's in the winter or what else is going on. But yeah, for the most part, it was just pretty quickly. I didn't need the nap. My mood improved and my stamina improved. I'm trying to think when that was. Let's see. I actually started running in March. And my husband and I usually go to a college football game. I'm from Central Ohio and I'm a third generation Ohio State Buckeye. So we usually go to one in-person, you know, football game at the stadium, the Shoe, and it's a big deal. It's a lot of hours. It's a long day. We're not young. There's lots of stairs to climb. So it's kind of it was always a big deal. And it was exhausting to me most of the times we went. I enjoyed it, but, you know, we'd end up taking the elevator or we'd have to stop on the stairs and it was tough. And that year, when we went to the game, I realized I wasn't exhausted. Mm-hmm. I wasn't challenged the way I had been. I was much more fit and had more stamina. So that was another thing that was really changed. And then possibly the most happy thing was that I was able to focus on my writing in a different way, a more intense way. I had gone through graduate school. I had done all kinds of very intense things, but there's something that happens at the end of a book when you're just really like turning down all the screws and trying to hammer everything together. That's this level of intensity that it's very much like racing where you're mm-hmm. really trying to race. It's that same kind of, I mean, you are just all in, you have to be completely focused and I couldn't do it. I had tried for years to get books published. I had a couple articles published, a couple essays. I did okay, but I could not land a book deal to save myself. And I finally got a book that felt like the right thing, the right fit. And it was the first book, Depression Hates a Moving Target. But being able to get the editor's critique and then make those changes and have the endurance to stick with it. Because I would give up. I kept giving up. I'd get the editor's things back. I'd be so discouraged. And I, you know, it would just exhaust me just to read them. So that stamina feels like it's spilled over into really the business area of my life. Mm-hmm. And that's been huge. I mean, that changed. I never saw that coming. No, I did not anticipate that. I just wanted to feel better. I just wanted to not die, essentially. I mean, seriously, I joke about that, but that's what I just felt like it's like, well, I tried everything else. We'll just try this jogging thing.
Yeah. Well, when I read on your website, you said that your first book, they asked you to cut 9,000 words.
Well, what and, they didn't and know. Change title. Yeah, they right. 9,000 change. That what the original draft was actually almost 200,000 words, and as published, it's 85,000 or 80,000, something like that. So, but I had cut it way back before I submitted it to them. But yeah, that's typical that they want less papers, expensive, and they want it tight. They want it really tight. So I was able to do that, and then they added. They wanted me to add. There's a resource section at the back, which. Sometimes I cringe when I read it now because I actually don't, those are things I did when I, in the first couple of years of my running that I don't take a gel every 45 minutes now at all. I would never do that. It would make me sick now. But at the time, that's what I did, and it worked at the time. So there's some things in there that I think, oh my gosh, I wish I could go back and tell people. But they asked me to add that. They asked me to add that to make it more of a resource for people. So, so they wanted it under 80,000 words. And then once they asked me to add the resource, it ended up, I think it's about 85.
Okay.
Is what the finished book is.
So how many drafts did you have to do? I mean, you said 200,000.
2007. I worked on it forever.
I mean the, 200,000 words, that's a, was that your first draft?
That was the really, the crappy real first draft. That was just the dump. Cause I write long. I tend to know how things should begin. I tend to have kind of a vision of where it should begin. And then I know, of course, usually where it's going to end and kind of the point of it all. Cause it's more than just writing about what happened. It's writing about why what happened is important. And I, did my best to do that. There are some places that I think now, oh my gosh, I didn't really say that as much about what was important as I, when you go back, they always say that writers don't actually ever finish anything. They just have to abandon it because they're on the deadline. So that's kind of what it felt like. Like I just eventually had to go, okay, fine, take it. I would say I had a first draft, within, I can't really say because I didn't work on that whole first draft right away. I worked on it kind of in parts because the story kept evolving. Because at first I thought I was just, I actually started writing about it when I was, I had just done my first half marathon and I thought, oh, middle-aged woman, gets off sofa, changes life, runs half marathon. Well, then I ended up running a marathon and then that changed things in a really big way. As I kept having other people read it, I realized that the real story was the mental health piece. That's really the story is about how, the combination of having this buddy to run with and this running group to run with, the structure of a training plan, all the pieces together, the fellowship, the structure, kind of pulled me through. And all the while I was doing, I still some days think, how could I possibly run? I look across the room and there's all these medals and I think, how could I possibly run these distances? I still kind of pinch myself. And that's what the book's about. It's about, the first line of the book is my mind was trying to kill me again, because that's what happens is my mind says, oh, you can't do this while I'm doing it. It's like, what? But that's my mind. And so I just wanted to give people, once I realized that was really a story, I wanted to give people a glimpse into the mind of someone who lives with chronic depression, who is not cured, and who still does, I'm not to brag, but who still does amazing things. I'm 61 and I've run 2 ultras, 3 fulls, 30 some halves in like 20 states and things like that. And that's just not what everybody does. So, so that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah. So do you, when you're, is there a regimen? As far as, give a little bit of insight about how does the movement help with the depression, chronic depression for people? There are people who may not have chronic depression, but, everybody kind of gets down every once in a while, but for people who are in that spot where the depression feels overwhelming, what is the balance? What is your kind of plan for keeping yourself moving so that the depression doesn't actually hit your target?
Well, what works for me is to always have a race that I'm registered for, that I paid for in the future. And so that kind of like pulls me toward it. That training plan pulls me toward it. But I know some people that need it to be that charity race where it's their heart that's pulling them through it, where mm-hmm. they're raising money for a cause. Whereas other friends need a challenge where, you know, like the great race across Tennessee or whatever, my friends are doing it. And so I've got to make sure I check off all these boxes and do all these miles too. And it's more of a competition thing. For me, it's more structure. There's a little competition in there too, but the structure of having a training plan and having somebody else who I trust, which would be a coach or like a running group or just someone else who I think knows what they're doing, having said, run X number of miles on this day, boom. And I don't have to decide because I get decision fatigue very easily. I get overwhelmed still very, very easily. And so having those decisions made for me, I just look at the schedule and, you know, I can tweak it. Obviously, I'm not totally locked into it. But most days, if I look at the schedule and it says 6 miles, then we're going to go 6 miles. If it says 12 miles, we're going to go 12 miles. I don't think about it. I just get up and I do the thing. Mm-hmm. So that's what keeps me going. But let me go back a bit. I think there's actually two questions there. So if someone has a regular movement routine, they have a community, they have all the support and they are doing the things and they're breaking a sweat once in a while and they are still having blue moods and sadness that does not pass and it's becoming kind of a regular thing. And especially if things that are ordinarily enjoyable to them don't bring them pleasure or having trouble showering, that's kind of a classic thing. Any of that, please seek help, please. Because that's where, you know, movement can only take you so far. I joke about movement being medicine, running is my therapy, all that kind of stuff. I still go to therapy and I still take meds and I probably will the rest of my life because I have a chronic condition. So let's just get that kind of on the table out in the open first. But if you're someone who isn't moving regularly, there is so much science behind how great movement and meditation, which I'll talk about in a little bit, are for your mental health, for your physical health, for your cognitive health, like build new brain cells. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want that? There's just so many studies that show that exercise is actually one of the best antidepressants there is. And so, I always think that if someone hasn't found, it's like a lot of times people will quit because the big thing that happened like during the pandemic is the gym people couldn't go to the gym. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's when Peloton went crazy yeah. because they finally filled that gap to a certain extent, although there's a social aspect of going to the gym and a competitive aspect mm-hmm. of going to the gym too. So those people really struggled. And but I always think it's about fit. It's about finding the movement that works for your body and also has that, it could be an antisocial element where you just want to run in the woods by yourself, or it could be a yeah. social element mm-hmm. where you want to run with a group, or you want to play pickleball with, you know, a partner, or you need the high competition of, I don't know what it would be, kind of laser tag. I'm not sure what it might be, but you know, you have to find something that it, again, not everybody's totally different, but there's just so many different ways to move your body, mm-hmm. Zumba, yoga. I mean, there's just so many Tai Chi, wonderful, wonderful ways. And they all count. Any of them counts. Just getting the heart rate up, getting that movement so that your digits are moving. And that the science is, it just completely backs it up. Time and time again, they do studies. And it can be as little as like 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to
doesn't
be
take much.
9 hours, you know.
So you, what was the thing that said marathon wasn't enough for you? I mean, just I'm curious because just
oh my god, that was another.
A lot of people,
I mean, that was like
you said, like oh, a marathon is the biggest we can go. And
yeah, no, what happened? Okay, so here's what happened. I was high as a kite from having my first book published. Just mm-hmm. crazy. We spent a ton of money flying all over the country doing book talks. Just, you know, I would say I spent my mother's, you know, the inheritance I got from my mother after she passed. But And I don't regret it at all. It was a blast. And my husband went with me and we saw a bunch of friends. And so I was just crazy high from that. And these friends of mine in my running group, same pace, many of them older than me, some by a decade, were doing, had done in the past, this ultra called Eagle Up. And it's a 5-mile loop. And the shortest distance is 50K. They have 50K, 50 mile, 100K, 100 mile, and a 24-hour race. Flat, Central Ohio, or not Central Ohio, it's Northeastern Ohio. So it's about an hour and a half from where I live, at basically sea level. Mm-hmm. You see the bathroom every 5 miles. Mm-hmm. You see your tent every 5 miles. You know, so it's a very, for an anxious runner, it's sort of the best you could do if you're going to do something like this. I mean, I wish there were a loop. I'm sure there probably are loop marathons, but I haven't done one yet. But so high on this book tour, my friend said, "Hey, it's time to sign up for Eagle Up, and it's the lowest price it'll be." And I thought, "What the heck?" So I signed up for it. So that was in probably November of 2019, and it was scheduled for June of 2020. Mm-hmm. And so we had a pandemic. And so the race was canceled in 2020. And we had gotten an Airbnb. My husband and I don't, our camping days are over. We camped, but our camping days are over. There's a campground right there where you can camp. And we don't camp. We're, you know, anyway. So we'd gotten the refund back from the Airbnb. And so in 2021, in, I don't know, March or something like that, when the emails came, I'd been getting, you know, some emails from Eagle Up. And when the emails came, I kept thinking, oh, that's great. I knew my friends were doing it again in 2021. But, you know, I'd had another book. We'd had all kinds of different stuff happen. And I wasn't really planning on doing it. And then I realized that I wasn't getting the marketing emails. I was getting the participant emails because they hadn't canceled.
Yeah, they gave you an automatic deferment. Yeah.
Right. They deferred me. And I knew that, but I had just completely forgotten because we had just, like I said, my husband had health issues. It was this crazy pandemic and there was just a lot going on. And 2021 was just about as crazy as 2020. Of course, 2022 has been about like that too. So it was literally about 6 weeks before the race. And I contacted a coach, Denny Cray. I hope I can run.
I know Denny. He's been on the podcast.
He's a great guy. And I had been following him for a while. I've been on his podcast a couple times. And I said, "Denny, help. I don't know what to do. I could defer again, or I could, they have a very lenient, transfer policy. I could transfer, but we had not been anywhere. I mean, we had not gone anywhere. We had not practically left our house for all that time. And so when I told my husband, he thought he just said, "Oh yeah, let's go." You know, Fulton, woo-woo. It's like this tiny little town in rural Ohio. On the Erie Canal. So that's how I ended up going out. So the short answer, that's a long answer. And he had me, let me just say, what he had me do that was so smart was run back-to-backs. So I'd run 10 miles on Saturday, 8 miles on Sunday, 12 miles on Saturday, 10 miles on Sunday. I just kept working myself up. And the longest I think I did was 18 on Saturday and then 10 on Sunday. And, 50K is 31 and change. So I never ran even close to 31 miles at the same stretch, but you have 24 hours with Eagle Up. They have a 24 hour cutoff. Very generous. That makes a huge difference because I'm slow and I knew I'd have to take breaks. And with the campground right there, I mean, people take naps, the 24 hour people or the people who are doing 100 miles. I mean, they'll take a nap, you know, quick 5 minute cat nap or whatever. So that's what he had me do. And it worked really well. And I finished. And then the next year I did it again. And I actually cut, I think almost an hour off my time. Cause I figured some stuff out, the first time you're just kind of trying to just finish without dying. And then the second one I figured. So, but the long answer, or that was the long answer. The short answer is I hang around with people who have audacious goals. And if you hang around with people who have audacious goals, eventually you're going to amaze yourself. You're going to do stuff that you absolutely know you could never do, and that you're going to enjoy doing stuff you never thought you'd even want to try. And that's just what happened, is I hang around with these amazing group of mostly women. I mean, I have a lot of male runner friends too, but my pace group is mostly women. Some are younger, some are older than me, and they just do amazing things. And so I just keep showing up and doing what they do, and that's how it goes. And we have a lot of fun too. And we go to breakfast. We have breakfast.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and that is something that, you know, I have, you hear about it, you know, motivational speakers will talk about it, you know, that of how much influence your community has upon you. And I noticed that, you know, especially that for me, I ran when I was in my late 20s and quit. But you know, I didn't have the community. I was not plugged in, and now I'm plugged into the community. And so, I've backed off. I'm not running as much, haven't run as much this year. Haven't run any races, just volunteered. But, it's like, I'm not worried that I'm going to be on my way to quitting again, because, you know, it's just, I'm plugged into the community, and they're like,
yeah, you know, it makes such a difference having the community, having, you know, it's a little bit of peer pressure, a lot of support, just having it on your radar, having people talk about the races they're doing and going, oh, that sounds interesting. I mean, all of that. It's been that's been a huge part of it for me too. I've always had a small friend group, and I'm in a couple of different communities. And so I've had that support, but the runners are a different breed, mm-hmm. and there's just something really special about them. I don't know. I mean, I'm probably biased, but I really think there is something special about people who run long distances.
I found that as well. And people that I talk to, so especially trail runners, that just,
yes. There's a special
the trail running community is just very, full of people who are just very gracious.
It's just not everybody, vibe.
Yeah.
Well, that's true of anything. Yeah. It's just a different vibe. Now, I found that among the back of the packers in the road community too.
Okay. Yes.
They're very generous and they're very, gracious. And, but I also have some really good friends that are really speedy road runners that are fantastic too. Mm-hmm. But there's something about the trail, cause you know, nobody's trying to qualify for Boston.
Right.
There might be some people that are trying to get into some of the bigger races, but it's not the same. I hate to say cutthroat, but it's just not quite the same energy. They seem to be there for different reasons,
mm-hmm.
and I really have enjoyed that.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is meditation. You said that you've been meditating for a long time. So were you meditating before you started running?
Yes. I had started meditating long before I started running. My husband introduced me to meditation. We were dating, and I don't know, we hadn't been dating very long. And he said something like, "Do you want to sit?" And I said, "What?" I don't even know what that is. And so he explained that he'd been studying Zen. And so he set the microwave timer for 5 minutes. And he just said, "Just sit there and try not to fidget." And that was literally my first meditation instruction, was just try not to fidget.
Wow.
And kind of focus on your breath, but just mostly try to be still. Try mm-hmm. to be still. And at first I thought it was weird. It took a while. And then I had an experience where I had some physical pain, some back pain. And I ended up finding Jon Kabat-Zinn, who does the mindfulness-based stress reduction.
Okay.
And then also a guy named Shinzen Young, who does some breakthrough pain, Egoscue. There's a number of different things that I sort of found all at once that were meditative-like. And that sold me, because when I realized that not fighting the pain didn't necessarily make it go away, but made it easier to bear, and then eventually it actually did help it go away,
mm-hmm.
that sold me on it. So it wasn't, it wasn't enlightenment, that's for sure. But it was very practical. I'm a very practical person. So that's,
I'm curious. You said, what was the process of, I mean, I'm familiar with that experience of, you know, and we've talked to ultramarathon runners here who have used that in their running. I mean, that in 100 miles, they've found that if they try to resist the pain, they can, or you can block it out. But if you try
for a while.
Yeah. You can block it out for a while. You can also damage your body badly that way. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have talked about, feeling the pain come and just says, oh, there you are, and accepting it and just letting it come, not resisting it, not magnifying it, but just knowing that it will come and that it will also, will pass in a run. Cause in a run, sometimes your pain tends to kind of come and go if it's not something serious. So.
Right. That's exactly the concept. The concept in meditation is equanimity.
Okay.
So it's holding whatever the experience is, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, holding it open-handedly so that you're just noticing it arise, do its little dance, and pass. Arise, do its little, and sometimes that happens very quickly. Sometimes it's a long, slow wave. And so that's what happened when I was, laying on the floor in these Egoscue E-size postures, these just different things you do for your back pain. Mm-hmm. And then also with Jon Kabat-Zinn's mindfulness-based stress reduction, all of that was just noticing, all right, this spasm is rising. Let's try not to tighten up around it. Mm-hmm. What happens when I don't tense my body, when I just try to stay as open and relaxed as I can? And I realized that while it was unpleasant and uncomfortable, it wasn't horrible. And I wasn't suffering. I wasn't mm-hmm. in agony. And then what ultimately happened physically was that my muscles learned that they didn't have to spasm, because I was training them by being equanimous, by just letting my body relax as much as it could. Sometimes they would still spasm. I would, go into what we call freak out, where I just couldn't not tighten up. But eventually they learned to relax because it's the spasms that were so painful. And so when I was beginning to run, I think that's another part of what I was doing, even in the very first first couple of weeks of Couch to 5K, was I was checking in with my body, because I'm used to doing body scans, scan meditation sometimes when I meditate, not always, but where you just sort of check in with all your parts. Mm-hmm. And then noticing, are your knees tense? Is your back tense? Is your neck tense? And then just trying to let that relax, just trying to kind of let those muscles unfold a little bit. And it sounds weird to people who don't do it, because wait a minute, aren't you tensing your muscles? Aren't you running? Isn't that tensing your muscles? But there's this quality of relaxedness or quietness, calmness within the body that happens even when you are doing very vigorous activity. And so that's the place that I found I could bring the meditation into the running. And that just, it sort of happened almost automatically just because I'd been meditating for so long. Mm-hmm. So now my goal in life is to introduce people to that, because like you said, many of them are already doing it.
Right.
They've already figured out, if I don't fight this, it goes so much better. And I would bet, I haven't done a poll or anything, but I did read a ton of performance books by performance training coaches, athletic performance coaches, when I was writing the most recent book, that people who run fast races, I know high-level athletes, they are doing it on purpose because they have found that not resisting is the most efficient thing to do. So let's say, let's take Meb running the Boston Marathon. When he is at his top pace, he has to be using only exactly as much energy as is needed for what he is doing. Mm-hmm. And he has to be fully concentrated. He has to be focused on that, on exactly what he's doing for 26.2 miles for, 3 hours, whatever. And that's a training. Now, he did it probably through running. I don't know if he meditates or not, but he trained his mind to do that. And anybody can do that. It's just a different, it's just a, sort of a matter of degree, because it just is the most efficient use of your energy. And I was so pleased to see in these books, either there was a thread of mindfulness or meditation throughout, or there was a chapter mentioning it, or there was something about calm and concentration, the combination of that calm and concentration within the book somewhere. And I thought they're already doing it. This is what they do. Mm-hmm. And so I just tried to sort of bring it in, you know, like elevate the conversation about it.
Yes. And having that being present when you're running, that is a big, I know a lot of runners they kind of take the opposite approach. You'll see them listening to music. They want their mind to be elsewhere. Right. And I tend to get that. I have gotten less focused as I run, just because running, I'm not having to pay as close of attention to where my body is. My body is.
Well, it depends on what you want. Yeah, it depends on what you want, because it's not about focusing so that you're like aware of every movement. The movement just becomes natural. Mm-hmm. But you're checking in, am I relaxed? Checking in, am I focused? Checking in, you know, and then if your mind wanders, that's fine. But it's just that, you know, that ability to put your mind where you want it. Right. That's what you're training. Mm-hmm. And so, I just did a talk before the Columbus Marathon about, it was about race anxiety, but it's really about anything. And you've got two choices. You either turn away from, in this case, anxiety, but it could be pain, it could be boredom, it could be, you know, anything that you experience as unpleasant, you can turn away from it. And that is a very valid technique. Use music, do positive visualization, distract yourself, tell yourself your favorite jokes, whatever. Talk to your running buddies, let the time pass as fast. Completely valid strategies. Or, and that's what I'm suggesting in this book, take a slightly different approach and turn toward, so that you're turning into, pointing your attention onto the pain. And like we said, like you said earlier, there are times when you can just block it out. And if you're not injuring yourself, that's fine. But what often happens is there comes a point in the race, there comes a mile, whatever that is, whatever mm-hmm. your wall is, where you can't,
right.
where you just can't. The pain is too much, and your skill at escaping it is too slow, too little, whatever. And so that's where the ability to be with the pain in a non-judgmental, open-minded, curious way is very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the combination of meditation and running is, and I like that what you said, it's the ability to focus your attention and focus your mind where you want it to be. Mm-hmm. And
it's a training. It's a training, just like how we train our bodies. We're just training the mind.
Yeah, and I mean the meditation. I was always bad at meditation, and so I never did. Every time I tried, you know, I failed. And meditation is what brought me into running. And you talk about the body scan meditation. Joe Dispenza is his book that kind of got me started on this mindset stuff. And
that's great.
I was wanting to change my life, and you know, he had this, and I'd never tried that type of meditation before. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I was able to latch onto. I was able to, rather than trying to not sit still, it was focusing, you know, on your body, you know, focusing on relaxing your body, gave my attention a project.
Yeah, gave it something to do. Exactly. Minds want to be busy. Their job is to think thoughts. So if you don't give them something to do, they're going to make stuff up. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And it's usually not positive what they make up.
Yeah, that's true. But then, you know, so then I was able to, you know, so I practiced that. It was like kind of what you did with running, you know, that I said, I'm going to keep doing this. You know, I may not feel like I'm very good at it, but I'm going to keep at it. And then I started running, you know, about 6 to 8 months later, and brought that same practice into my running. And I also did chi running, you know, you talked about that. And so mm-hmm. of getting the feedback from, and now it's the reason my mind wanders a little bit more, is because that feedback is just a natural part of what I do.
Right.
And so, but yeah, just of running through the woods and just feeling, you know, it's just being aware of how my feet are landing. you know, and mm-hmm. just getting that feedback of that, you know, that every it there is a joy in the two and mixing the two.
Oh yes. Yes. Yeah. And I, you know, and some days I'll choose an object of meditation that has nothing to do with my physical sensations. It'll be the color green, especially mm-hmm. in the spring here in Central Ohio. The green, it just shouts at you. It's so gorgeous. And so I will just spend the entire run noticing all the different shades and shapes of green. Mm-hmm. And then my mind will wander and I very gently bring it back to green. And it's so pleasant. I mean, and then I feel the pleasant body sensations of that, you know, through my body. Sometimes I'll use bird song, you know, a sound of something like that, or even a scent. We have lilacs here. Oh, and huh. sometimes when there's, if I'm in an area where there's a lot of lilacs, just catching a whiff of that scent and letting that just kind of fill me. It sounds pretty nerdy, but it's bliss. It just is. I mean, it's my geeky meditation bliss. It totally works for me.
So what book are you working on now? Is it the meditation book?
Okay. So the one that just came out is Make Every Move a Meditation. And that's the one about how mm-hmm. to move. And what I'm working on right now is actually a project. It's like a project very close to my heart because I've been working on it for many, many years. It's a book of daily meditations where, you know, there's a little quote, a little essay, but then at the end of each page, there's a practice. So instead of it being like an affirmation or a prayer or something like that, or change of thought, it's a practice. So it's just a little tiny hit of mindfulness for that day. Okay. So it makes it real easy. And it's simple little stuff. It's not anything complicated, just to try to bring you into the moment for a little bit of time during the day, once during the day. So that's what I'm working on right now.
And that is something that I think, you know, I tended when I was meditating. I was like, oh, I did that, and now I go on with the rest of my day. But as I continue to practice, I notice that popping up. I mean, I'm carrying that through.
It bleeds over, right? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's a skill, and you become what you want is kind of a foreground reversal. So instead of you having this container that your meditation is in, your life is the meditation. And then once in a while you actually do a formal practice, but it's sort of all can be all the time without you having to be effortful. It's sort of like what you were saying about how you feel like it's okay to let your mind wander now because you're already present most of the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's beautiful because that's it. You're naturally in a present mindset. And so, yeah, once in a while, I mean, it's great to choose, okay, today I'm just going to let my mind go and see where it goes and mm-hmm. let it go. I mean, I work stuff out, writing related stuff. I work out tech issues. I'll have something going wrong with my website that nobody can figure out. And I'll just say, okay, let's just take this on a run and mm-hmm. see what happens. And, you know, not always, but sometimes it'll go, oh my gosh, it's the DNS, whatever, the server's, I don't know. But every once in a while, I don't know enough tech. I know just enough tech to be dangerous, but mm-hmm. it'll be, well, it's only happening when this happens. And that's not something that I told the person who can fix it. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. that'll pop in my head. So it's great. But again, it's about choosing what you do with your thoughts and what you do with your mind.
Yeah. And eventually I didn't, you know, I would always have racing thoughts, or I would have a cascade of negative thoughts. It would just, it would just be like a downward spiral and mm-hmm. Seemed almost powerless to stop it. And I've found that I tend to be able to now to choose the thoughts that I want to think, and, you know, that I'm not going down those pathways anymore.
Right.
So it's just much more peaceful life.
It's very powerful because I don't know, it just gives you so much. I mean, it's not control in the sense that the external stuff gets magically better, mm-hmm. but my response to it, I still have some spirals and some very negative responses to things, but I catch myself so much more quickly and know what to do with it now. It's definitely a huge improvement.
Over. I call it management rather than control.
You manage.
You manage your thoughts. You manage your emotions. I mean, that's as in an ultra marathon. I say there's three things you have to manage. You have to manage your energy. You know, that's right. Primary. You have to manage your thoughts. You have to manage your emotions, and that you know, the mindset piece of that is what I, you know, and in life as well. That is. having that success.
And I would argue that by managing your thoughts and emotions, you are managing your energy.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because you're only using exactly as much energy as you need for the activity you have chosen.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing. That's the, that's when I knew I could do an ultra. Mm-hmm. When I knew I could do that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You said you like loops, and there are some people who think that's just, that's the most awful thing to do.
Infinite capacity for boredom. It's also anxiety. It is because I know where the bathroom is. I know where my tent is. I know, you know, in 5 miles I'm going to see it. So, that's just me. I can't say never, but it's not likely that I'm going to go to Colorado and do, even a 50K that's out and back at 12,000 feet or mm-hmm. even 9,000 feet or something like that. That's probably not going to happen. I might do a marathon of, something like that, but I just need that little security blanket of knowing that I'm going to see my stuff every few months. Yeah. I don't really care. That's what's so amazing about the running community is that there's something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to go get lost in the wilderness in the snow? Hey, there's a trail run for
you. There's a trail run for that.
Yeah, yes. There's absolutely a trail run for you. Bring your skis and your poles and, you know, and your frostbite kit.
And your sled. The lady I talked to, she was up in the Yukon, and it was 100 miles, and it was like there were no aid stations. And they had to pull like everything that they needed on a sled behind them.
And some people love that. In fact, I think I have this friend who lives in Colorado. She used to live in Ohio, and she moved to Colorado and Boulder. And I think she and her husband have done something like that where they pulled their own sled for, I don't know if it was 100 miles, but it was a long way. I mean, mm-hmm. more than a marathon. And, you know, that if that's your thing, oh my gosh, go do it. I'm cheering you all the way. And I'll be running my little loops, you know. I mean, I've done 20 miles on an indoor, I think I did 22. I've done at least 20 on an indoor track that was 10 laps a mile before.
Okay.
And, you know, so I just have that, maybe it's need for security, but also the ability to just be entertained by the mundane.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, you talked about meditation and running. I mean, that if you're able to really kind of settle into your body and your the time where you're at, a loop course is very doable. It's a discipline. You'd have to, you know, you have to continue to do that for an extended period of time. But yes, it's a different aspect of self-awareness that is a, you know, very, very doable.
And sometimes the cows get loose and that's fun.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine was doing the 50 miler and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning and she has her headlamp on and she looks up and there's Bessie right in the middle of the trail, the old dairy cow.
What's really scary is when all you see is the eyes and that's in your
eyes. Yeah. Oh my God. That would be crazy. Yeah. I wasn't running at night at all. So, I didn't have that experience, but oh my gosh. Yeah. I've had plenty of times where, we like to run on the Olentangy Trail here in Central Ohio. And there are tons of deer mm-hmm. and, you know, you'll be looking at the trail and there's nothing in front of you and you just happen to glance over and there's six pairs of eyes.
Yes.
And some of them are like up almost as high as you are. Okay, let's keep going. And luckily they're mostly very docile deer, except when they have babies, you have to kind of, when the babies are really young, you have to kind of,
You have to be careful.
Make sure
in any animal, don't get between the mom and her baby. So.
Especially the geese. Ugh, they're the worst.
Yeah. Well, Nita, how can people find you if they hear this podcast and want to get your books and connect with you?
The best way is to go to my website, which is nitasweeney.com. So it's NITASWEENEY.com, just like my name spelled. So,
okay.
on there are the books. There's all these different places. My editor loves me to say that my books are available wherever fine books are sold, which mm-hmm. is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there's a couple of downloads, like there's a meditation myth download. There's a little ebook about 3 tools for a healthy, happy mind. There's just a general sign up. There's a body scan meditation, a guided, body scan meditation. So hop on there and, you know, get some of the free stuff, and then you'll end up on my newsletter, but you can unsubscribe really easily. There's just a sign up for that if you want. I send one out maybe once a month, maybe a little more often, like right now, you know, if there's a sale at of any of my books or any freebies or anything like that, I try to let people know. And then I usually try to, I don't know if I'm on a podcast, like I, you know, mention this or something like that. Just let people know where they can find me. That's what my newsletter is. It's not quite as bad as a holiday letter, but I try to have a little humor, but, and also some insight. Just, you know, sometimes I give some tips about, okay, this is what I'm struggling with and this is how I'm dealing with it, things like that. Because I'm essentially a mental health advocate. That's my bottom line, is to let people who have, you know, whether it's just sadness or you're just having a bad day, or whether you have the actual diagnosable stuff that needs professional help, I try to just be there for people.
Yeah. And there's, you mentioned anxiety. There's a lot of people who, you know, wouldn't identify as, you know, having mental health troubles, but they really deal with anxiety, you know, especially around you know, especially
depression and anxiety. Those are just huge. Yes. So I try to, you know, I have a few little videos. I'm on all the social media channels too, but I'm pulling back from those a little bit just because it's so much. And really, my newsletter is the best way for people to stay in touch with me. And there's a contact form on my website. I love to hear from people. Love it, because writing is often like shouting into the void. So when I hear from somebody and they say, "Hey, I read your book," or, you know, "I saw your book in the wild," or whatever, I love hearing that.
Yeah, that's great. That's good. Before you go, I have the bridge questions.
Who approacheth the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridgekeeper. I'm not afraid.
What is your must-have piece of gear?
Oh, a sparkle skirt. I run in Boulder Athletic skirts. They're compression tights with a little skirt over it, and they have giant pockets. There's 6-inch pockets on each thigh and then a 12-inch zipper pocket. So you can put so many snacks in there. You can practically put a full breakfast in there. But yeah, I like that. That's fine. And then I usually always have my watch, which currently is a Garmin, but that might not always be. But yeah, I'm almost always got to have those pockets. Big pockets.
I like that. What is the strangest thing that you've seen when you're...
Oh, there's two. The first was on a relatively busy trail, but kind of an abandoned stretch that was way down, sort of low under, you know, the highways and stuff. A baby buggy, like a running stroller.
Okay.
Abandoned, pushed into the woods about 4 feet, and it had been there a while. And I'm thinking, where's the baby? Why did they leave? I mean, they didn't just park it there for the, you know, it'd been there because there was, So that was probably the weirdest thing. And then a 35mm camera with a long lens sitting in the middle of a suburban street.
Oh my goodness.
Nobody around, not a soul. So I picked that puppy up and put it on the sidewalk because I was just waiting for a car to come and smash it. Mm-hmm. That was just the weirdest thing. So, but the stroller, there were three of us running together, and it spooked us. It was like, we did stop and take a picture on the way back because it was still there, but that it was freaky for it to just be there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. those are the kinds of things that make you wonder. So third question is, what is the word or phrase that, sums up your philosophy of life?
Oh, the word or phrase, probably. Okay. Two things. One, the word is stay. Because it will change. Don't leave. Stay. And that's kind of my serious spin on things, but I'm serious because I almost didn't stay.
I like that.
And then, but my phrase is just the one size does not fit all. You know, we're all, it's not original, but we're each an experiment of one. That's so find if what's working, what your coach says isn't working for you, find a different coach. You know, there's tons of them out there. Or if this trail thing isn't for you, try road. If road isn't for you, try mud. There's just too many options. So,
plenty out there. Well, thank you a lot, Nita. I appreciate taking time to talk to me.
Oh, thank you. This is such an honor to be asked. I really appreciate it. And take care, everyone. Just take good care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others or ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. I have my online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do not know somebody who might like it, take it just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.